Well, good morning. It's good to be back in Montreal. Marilyn and I always enjoy our visits to your good city, and especially to this lovely church family. So thank you very much for the kindness shown and the privilege of being here. And the shower this afternoon, a big party. Seems to me we were here last time, there was another party. You have a lot of parties? It's a great congregation. Well, glad to be with you, and thank you so much. Last time we were here, we introduced the concept of having an encounter with God. And we studied one Bible character, Isaiah by name, and his encounter with God. And this morning, we're going to continue our thoughts of having an encounter with God, connecting with God, meeting with God, getting related to God, experiencing God, walking with God, knowing God. We want to focus upon that. Several years ago, Marilyn and I were traveling from Toronto over to Kitchener, where the choir from the college and seminary where I worked was going to be putting on a little program, and I was to give a little devotional. It was wintry weather, and halfway there, my car hit a black spot, an icy spot, and it was 6:30 at night, so there was a lot of traffic. And my car spun around, it went over the icy, snowy area in between the two lanes, went up onto the lane of the oncoming traffic, and spun around and stopped facing back to Toronto. And that was the first time we breathed for the last 45 seconds. Because it was heavy traffic that night, 6:30, Toronto, Guelph. But the fact of the matter is that when we went into that spin and crossed over that island and then landed in the lane in the opposite traffic, looking the other way, we looked around on that traffic line and we couldn't see a car. There wasn't a car in there. We were so exhausted and frightened, we pulled over to the side, took our breath, and decided to go back to Toronto. That was an experience with God. In the same year, 12 young scouts with a scoutmaster drowned in one of the lakes up in northern Ontario. That too was an encounter with God. As you go through life, you encounter God. And your circumstances may be varying and the consequences may be different, but the fact of the matter is, God is very active in your life. He's very involved in that life of yours. Encounters with God. Well, how do you handle them? What are you going to do with them? What do they mean? What are you encountering when you have an encounter with God? Well, that encounter that we had on the highway that night and that those young boys had was an encounter with the providence of God. You can encounter all kinds of aspects in relationships with God. But to encounter the providence of God is a distinct experience. And I want to speak this morning about encountering the sovereignty of the providence of God in your life, in my life. Right where you're sitting, right here, right at this very moment, you're in the midst of encountering the providence of God. Sometimes it's very dramatic. Sometimes it's on the verge of sensational. Frequently, it's just on the common, mundane living of life. But your life encounters the providence of God. And we need to be ready to recognize it, ready to respond to it, and know how to manage it and handle it. So I want to talk with you this morning, share with you about the providence of God in your life and in my life. The place to begin, of course, will be with a definition. So when we talk about the providence of God, we're talking about God's continued activity in this world for the realization of his plan. When I talk about the providence of God in your life, I'm talking about his continued activity in your life for the fulfillment of his plan. That's what we mean when we talk about the providence of God. Now, if you turned in your Bible, you would have difficulty finding that word in the Bible. But you find the concept, the truth of that word, from Genesis right back to Revelation. All through the scriptures, the providence of God is declared. Romans chapter 8, verse 28, a familiar verse to many of you, goes like this. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Now you could abbreviate that verse by putting a period right in the middle of it. And we know that in all things God works, period. That's the providence of God. It's God at work. It's God at work. And it's God at work for the fulfillment of his plan, for the realization of his plan. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 21 says this, many are the plans in a man's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose that prevails. That's the providence of God. You have plans, you make plans, you work plans, you fish with plans, you play, you have plans. Many are the plans in a woman's heart, but it's the Lord's providence that prevails. The word providence isn't used there. It's used in our translation. It's the word purpose, but it's the providence of God that we're talking about. And the providence of God appears all through the scriptures, and its providence appears in all kinds of different avenues and venues. I want to show you how the providence of God is demonstrated in four different major areas of our experience in life. First of all, his providence is demonstrated in the physical universe. Acts chapter 14, verse 17 says this, he has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and the crops in the seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. Now that's the providence of God. Job 38:12 says this, have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place? In Job chapter 38, God asks Job 32 questions. Every question is answered with no, no, no. Because every question identifies God's providence in the universe. And we become exceedingly sensitive and conscious of God's providence in our day as we think of Puerto Rico, as we think of California, as we think of Florida, as we think of many parts of the world, as Dr. Kimoff has mentioned in his prayers. What we're saying is we're seeing God's providence. His providence is extensive. And in the universe, we see God's providence. In the animal kingdom, we see God's providence. Job 38:14 says this, who provides food for the raven when its young cry out to God and wonder about their lack of food? Matthew 26, look to the birds, says Jesus of the air. Look to the birds. They do not sow or reap or store away food in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. That's the providence of God. It's God's activity. It's God's doing. His providence is evident in the physical universe. His providence is evident in the animal kingdom. His providence is evident in the political world. Daniel 4:26 says this, "Your Lord God Most High is sovereign over the kingdoms and gives them to anyone he wishes." The providence of God is evident in the governments of our land. That's the providence of God. So when you look at creation, when you look at the animal kingdom, when you look at the political scene, behind all that's on the stage, behind all that's on the table, there is a hand of God. And it's God's providence. He is the one who's at work. He's continually at work, fulfilling his plan, his purpose. Now, that's staggering to me. It's beyond my comprehension. I believe it because the Bible teaches it, but I sure can hardly digest it. And that's probably the way you feel too. It's an astonishing, amazing thing. God's hand, God's work, God's providence. He is at work, fulfilling his plan, fulfilling his purpose. The one that really connects with us is when we find out that God's providence extends far beyond the physical universe, far beyond the animal kingdom, far beyond the top reins of politics. It connects with life of you, me, every one of us, right down here on planet Earth. It's the providence of God. Let me read you a verse or two. It's demonstrated primarily in the lives of individual people. And we're going to look at one person whose life was a marvelous and perplexing sometimes, a demonstration of the providence of God. And the person I want to take you to is the person of Joseph. Joseph is a Bible character that everybody loves, because his story is a beautiful, wonderful story. Joseph was the son of Jacob. He was a grandson of Abraham. He had 10 older brothers, one younger brother. But Joseph's life is a wonderful demonstration of the providence of God. And I want to try to help you see three things about God's providence that's clearly demonstrated to us in the life of Joseph. The first thing is the extent of God's providence. What is the extent of God's providence in Joseph's life? Well, let me read you a few verses. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 37. I start at verse 12. Now Joseph's brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. That's what fathers and sons do in their pastoral life. Verse 13 says, "And Jacob said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' Joseph replied. And so he said to him, 'Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back from them.' Then he sent him off to the valley of Hebron when Joseph arrived at Shechem." Now, that's the providence of God. What happened? 10 older brothers gone away with the flocks. One day, Father Jacob says, "Joseph, I'm going to send you here from Shechem. I'm going to send you over here to from where we are here over at the valley of Shechem, and I want you to check on the boys." A normal kind of expected experience. How are the boys doing? How are the flocks doing? How's our cattle? And normal kind of experience. But it's the providence of God. God is the one who puts this into the mind of Jacob. God is the one who makes Joseph responsive. Sure, okay, Dad, I'll go. So you've got it going. That's the extent of the providence of God. It extends to the apparently free acts of men and women and boys and girls, of leaders and followers. Now you go through life making all kinds of acts that appear to be your free choice. Behind them is the providence of God. And God sometimes changed what you were planning to do. That's the providence of God. You alter a plan, you shut down a plan, you dream up a plan, and that's your plan. Behind it, that's the providence of God. That's the extent of God's providence to the apparently normal, natural plans that men and women make as they go through life. And that's what's happening with Jacob and with the brothers and with Joseph. But the very planned acts and decisions trigger a sequence of events that radically changes history and affects history. It has enormous consequences. Behind it, Jacob, Joseph, the boys make their plans. And that's true in your life. That's true in my life. It extends to the normal plans and decisions and issues that are made in that. Well, notice what happened. In verse 15, it goes on and says that when Joseph got over there, a man found him, Joseph, wandering around in the field. And asked him, what are you looking for? Now, what could be more natural? Joseph gets there, and he's wandering around the field. Why would he be wandering around in the field? Well, that's because he can't find his brothers. And what happens? Well, a man, and I'm going to include a word that's not in the Bible. This is my word. And this man happened to find him. Wandering in the field, and happened to ask, what are you looking for? And Joseph replies, I'm looking for my brothers. Could you happen to tell me where they're grazing their flocks? Verse 17 says, they've moved from here. Really? Oh yeah, I happened to hear them say, let's go to Dothan. Do you see the amazing instances of the providence of God? It's just sort of, for shepherds, I suppose, sort of run-of-the-mill kind of routine experiences that they'd have. Father says, let's send them. The boys, I will go. They take them. Father says, go and check and see how they're doing. Take some food to them. And so Joseph goes, he can't find them, he's wandering around. Oh, this guy happens to spot him and comes up and says, what are you looking for? I'm looking for my brothers. Oh, I happened to see them. I happened to hear, as a matter of fact, I happened to hear what they said, that they were going over here to, he's going to go. It's the providence of God. Not an accident. Not lucky. Providence. That's God's providence. It's his continued activity for the realization of his plan. Coincidental, accidental, incidental. All of them. But under the hand of God. Are you feeling it? That's the extent of God's providence. Now, there's a little note over in Ezra that gives me a little clue of something that's going on behind the scenes. And here it is. Ezra chapter 7, verse 27 says this: "Praise be to the Lord, the God of our fathers, who has put it into the king's heart to bring honor to the house of the Lord." Now, see, when I look at the story of Joseph, it's more than he just happened. It was more than coincidence. It's providence. And how did that get into his heart? Why was he standing there? How did they meet? Oh, it's the hand of God. And that's really clear when you come over to Ezra. It says clearly, who put it in his heart to do this. So that's the extent of God's providence. It extends to the happenstances. It extends to the incidents. It extends to the accidents. Extends to the supernatural, the sensational, the spectacular, to the mundane, to the disturbing, to the hurtful. That's the providence of God. It's God's continued activity in this world for the realization of his plan. And that's what's happened here in Joseph's case and the situation. Wow. The second thing that Joseph's life experience explains to me is something about the relationship between the providence of God and bad things. Because that's a problem I have with God's providence. I like the good things, but the bad things, is that God's providence? See, that's my problem with the providence of God. I look at this and said, is that the providence of God? So what's the relationship between God's providence and bad things? Wrong things sometimes, evil things. Well, I'm going to read you a little extended passage, and you watch for the relationship between God's providence and bad things. I'm reading again from Genesis 37, starting at verse 18. It says, "So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance. And before he reached them, they planned to kill him. 'Here comes the dreamer,' they said to each other. 'Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured them. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams.'" Wow. "When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue his brother from their hands. He said, 'Let's not take his life.'" Are you seeing the dynamics? "Let's not take his life. Don't shed his blood. Throw him into the cisterns here. Don't lay a hand on him.' Reuben said this to rescue him from them and to take him back to the father." Well, isn't the plot thickening now? "And so Joseph came to his brothers, and they stripped him of his robe. They richly enriched the ornamental robe that he was wearing, and they took him and they threw him into the cistern." Well, they were going to kill him. Why didn't they do that? Well, one of the brothers suggested an alternative plan. They said, "Well, okay, let's go that way." They threw him into the cistern. Now, the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat their meal. And they looked up and they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh. And they were on their way to... they were coming this way. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood. Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. Isn't that interesting? How's this happening? And after all this, his brothers, our own flesh and blood, his brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, the brothers pulled Joseph up from the cistern, sold him for 20 shekels of silver, and off he went. What's the relationship between the providence of God and bad things? Well, sometimes God restrains it, so it doesn't happen. Their plan was to kill him. Providence of God. Oh, it stopped. No, why? No, God's got plans for Joseph. And so God works back here, and this caravan comes along, and they say, well, we won't kill him, we'll sell him. And what a coincidence. A coincidence? No, providence. See, that's the providence of God. He's the one who's in control here. He manages those circumstances. And so what he does is he prevents them from doing what they planned to do and wanted to do and were ready to do. He prevents them from killing him. But what does he do? He allows them to sell him to the camel Ishmaelites. Now, he could have had another plan, but he allowed them. He allowed the caravan to arrive just as these guys are having lunch planning to kill the boy. And they look up and here's a caravan. Who arranged that caravan? Tell me. Who? Providence of God. And that caravan arrives just at the right time. Just at the right time. And the deal is made so that they make a little bit of money and Joseph doesn't die. That's the providence of God. That's the hand of God. He sometimes prevents them from doing wrong, and he sometimes allows them to do wrong. And why does he allow them to do wrong? Because he's got a plan. And his plan is for Joseph to go to Egypt and to be sold as a slave into the household of Potiphar, a powerful man. Well, if you know the rest of the story, you know how it happens. See, when you start thinking about God and his providence, it's easy, first of all, for us to understand that its relationship to evil. Sometimes God prevents evil. Sometimes God permits evil. And in the permitting that evil, sometimes God refrains and redrafts the whole plan. It's just an astonishing picture of the providence of God. Now take that picture back there and put that picture down into your life. And that's happened in your life over and over again. God has prevented evil from happening. God has permitted evil to happen because God has a purpose to bring out of that, and a wise purpose. And maybe you haven't lived long enough to see what that purpose is. Maybe you have lived long enough now and able to look back and see that God had a purpose in that. But that's the extent of God's providence in relationship to evil. He sometimes prevents it, sometimes restrains it, sometimes redrafts it. And what's he doing? He's at work. We know, says Romans 8:20, we know that in all things God works. That's the providence. In all things God works. And there's the extent. the relationship between the providence of God and the bad things that happen to me in my life. Well, that's the second thing that I learned about providence of God. And there's a third thing that I learned about God's providence. And the third thing is, that God's providence is, in my disappointments, his appointments. And that's what happens in Joseph's life. Joseph goes to Egypt, and if you know the story, it's a wonderful, wonderful story. It ends beautifully. Up here, it looks terrible. But here it looks beautifully. And that's the providence of God. So what I want us to see from Joseph's life is what the extent of God's providence is and what the relationship is between God's sovereignty and wisdom and God's providence and our problems. But then the last little note is this. What's the benefit, what's the outcome of the providence of God? What's the outtake of it all? How does this story end? Well, for Joseph, it ended very significantly. In order to catch the picture of it, let me remind you what Reuben did when he discovered that Joseph had been sold, when his plan was to release Joseph so he could go back. The Bible says that he tore his clothes and he mourned many days. That's his response. When they go back to Jacob, they tell Jacob, this is the clothes we found. Look at the blood. I guess he's dead. It says exactly the same words. Jacob tore his clothes and he mourned many days. What's the value of understanding? What's the practical value of understanding the providence of God? Well, it helps to interpret. It helps to cope with disasters. See, what I'd like to have been able to do, knowing the story, is to run up to Reuben at the end when he's tearing his clothes and pouring out his tears and feeling terrible about the whole thing. I'd like to tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, Reuben, God's got a plan here. Don't cry. I know it doesn't look good, and I know you sure don't understand, and I know you're disappointed, and I know you wanted to do this, but Reuben, God's got a plan. I'd like to have done it. When Jacob is tearing out his clothes, and he's mourning and groaning, and Joseph, my son, he's dead, he's gone into slavery, oh my goodness, I'd like to have been able to knock at the door. I got a pastoral call. Is Jacob here? Yeah, let me see Jacob. And I'd love to be able to go into Jacob, stop your crying. God's got a plan. He's providentially in control. That's the value of the providence of God. That's the practical value of it. The practical value is my disappointments are really his appointments. And I acknowledge that I don't see the big picture. I don't know that's all happening. I don't know how it's all going to end. I know where it's in here and I'm disappointed. I know I'm here, I'm brokenhearted. I know I'm here, I'm struggling. But stop the tears. God's in control. God is sovereign. And in his sovereigns, he works providentially for his plan and for his purpose. That I can live with. I can live with that. That's the rest that comes. Not easily sometimes, but that's the rest that comes with understanding that God is continually at work for the realization of his plan. And he changes my plans, and he restrains evil, he permits evil, he prevents evil. But the plan, that's the plan. Well, that brings you and me to the place of what are we going to do about it? And that's what I want to encourage you to do. I want you to understand that you're going to go through experiences that you will survive and sometimes thrive because you are able to comprehend the providence of God, and God gives you the grace and the strength to accept that and to live with that and to trust him with that. He's got a plan and he's working that plan out. If you're not a follower of Jesus this morning, you need to understand that you're here this morning in the providence of God. God has allowed you. He brought you here. And I don't know the circumstances of why you're here, but if you're not a follower of Jesus, you can be assured, and we all are assured here, that you are here in the providence of God. So that God will be able to give you the message and hear you the message that you need to hear. And that message is that we have services like this where we learn and teach the Bible to help people understand that going through life, God providentially works to bring them into circumstantial situations where they understand they need God. They need the forgiveness of God. To understand that Jesus has died so that God could justly and righteously forgive them if they would simply repent of their sin and turn in faith to Jesus and become a follower of Jesus. And so God has brought you to the service this morning in his providence. You're not here by accident. You may have resisted. You may not be too comfortable. You may not have wanted to do it. You may have been here because your parents are here. But ultimately, you're here because God providentially arranged it. And that's because he wants you to understand that there's an opportunity that you have, again today, that you have an opportunity to become part of the family of God and to experience the forgiveness of God and to start a whole new pathway in life. And all of that happens when you confess to him simply that you have sinned. Thank him for dying for you, paying the penalty for your sin, putting your faith and trust in him, accepting him, becoming a follower of Jesus. I hope you'll do that this morning. That would be a wonderful climax to it. The whole process that God has been working for. And it would be a life-changing and eternal-changing experience for you. Many of us are Christians. You're followers of Jesus. And we need to understand the marvel and the wonder of the providence of God in our lives. All kinds of stories that I have about God's providence. When Marilyn and I were just married, we were school teachers, and we decided that we wanted to go as missionaries over to Africa and teach in a Christian school for missionaries, children. And so we did all the planning and preparation. We went to the elders of our church and talked to people that were in authority. And we started reading our New Testaments in French to be prepared because that's where the school was. And we did all of this. And finally, we said, well, we're ready. Ready to resign and ready to take the step. And I sent the letter over to the school. And a few weeks later, I got a letter back from the principal. It was rather short and a little curt, and he simply thanked us for writing, but said that there were no openings. And so the door was shut. And we were hugely disappointed. But over the years, we've seen God's wisdom in shutting that door to lead me into another kind of ministry that I wasn't expecting and wasn't even planning for, another whole ministry for the rest of my life. Our disappointments are His appointments. And that's true in your life. That's true in our lives. That's the providence of God. Life-changing. Absolutely thrilling. You know the story of William Cowper? They pronounce it Cooper over in England. He was a friend of John Newton. They lived on the same street. He gardened for John Newton. John Newton wrote Amazing Grace, as you know. Well, William Cowper wrote a hymn that came out of his experience. He was struggling with life. And he decided one day that he was going to drown himself. And he went to a river, but somebody pulled him out of the water before he drowned. He went and bought some poison because he was going to poison himself. And he says as he tried to do that, his fingers contracted. I don't know what that means, but that was his word. His fingers contracted and his hand paralyzed so that he wasn't able to take the poison that he was planning to take. So he decided he'd hang himself. 3 times he tried to hang himself, and every time the rope snapped. So finally he decided to fall on a knife. And he fell on the knife and the blade of the knife broke. He got his life right with God. And he wrote a hymn. And you know what it says? God moves in a mysterious way His wonders to perform. And we're going to sing that hymn in closing. And I want you to put it, I want you to put that into your life and your life into that hymn. There are things that you don't understand and that I don't understand about our lives. There are some things that now we see that we cried about 20 years ago or whatever. There are things that we don't comprehend, but what we do is we understand that our God is a God of providence who is constantly at work in our lives for the fulfillment of His plan. So stop your crying. Wait. Pray. Watch for the picture to come together. And I just suspect that for some of us, it won't come together until we get to heaven. And then we'll see the picture. And then we'll understand. Our disappointments were His appointments. So we're going to sing the song. Do you know the hymn? And as we do it, I want you to reflect upon the fact that your God is a God of providence. Will you?